C1C. Number 5B.
Read now this text until this method is evolved so that you begin to hear what is now the overall message of the chapter, how is it broken up, what is the epitome of each part, how is it broken up further in subtones, what are the epitomes of the subtones, and so on. This naturally would be a terrific thing for a student to do, but unfortunately we can't do that in a seminar. I can't easily say now we go into our rooms for 2 days or so. One would have to be fair and give the student a chance, not to ask him that he does the whole thing in an hour or 2 hours. And so we have to leave out certain phases of text interpretation. That's why I gave you the method. So if we take this chapter on creation, what is already established is actually that we already have the overall tone, then the great sevenfold development through from mind to love, and also the subtones. Therefore, the work is already done, but I would like to do at least something with you, namely that we take once, I have never done that with the other chapters, that we take once the chapter creation, because it's a short chapter, and read it together word by word, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, not quite yet. I just show you what we are going to do. And show you how one approaches it with a structured consciousness, therefore with a structured sense of interpretation, compared with an atomistic consciousness and an atomistic sense of interpretation. I can do that in this way, that I try to read the text to you, and you can follow it then in the textbook, and then I speak out loud what's going on in my mind, what kind of reasoning goes on when I read the text, how I try to translate the text into categories of the system, and how then through that translation of the text into categories of the system, we arrive at the text interpretation that is ordered. So, let us assume that we have already found, as what is here in this. Study material which you have here in front of you. Perhaps you take this study material in front of you, which gives the layout of the chapter. Interpretation is a question of relationship, which means that the part should always be considered in relationship to all the other parts. Therefore, that we are not just happy with those epitomes here, the ball type epitomes, but that when we have that, then we begin to think about our findings. We ponder our findings. It is that point where we can more or less close the book for a while and to say, well, do these epitomes make sense? Do they stand in a certain relationship to each other? What is their relationship? Can I, by considering these epitomes in relationship, find out a new insight? we come now to the great point that true interpretation is actually creative. We want to be creative and therefore see that our understanding of the system has within itself a creative ability, then we only have to consider the relationships of our findings, because relationships are creative. They show us suddenly something new, whatever that new is. So let's look at these findings here. We have here under mind, just that we know where we are, we have creation is the infinite image or infinite idea of the infinite mind, because all is mind. Now, first of all, do you see that this has to do with mind? Mind, you would say, has to do with image, because mind is that which forms an image. It has to do with idea, because mind creates ideas. It has to do with the allness of mind, because all is mind. And so you get first the terrific sense that Mrs. Eddy presents the subject of the realm of idea, which is the overall tone, the realm of idea, from the point of view of mind, and says that realm of idea is a creation of divine mind. It is mind created, and it is a creation that is an all creation, that has not created a part of it, but all. So we have here a sense first that creation consists of ideas, that these ideas are creations of mind, and that these ideas are constituting all. Can you hear now a very specific mind tone? Then we go to spirit, and we would see if that epitome would be right. We would see now she presents that same subject of the realm of idea from the point of view of spirit, and we would see spirit, not matter, is the substance of an idea, and therefore the substance of creation. Can you see that this has a spirit tone in it? Because spirit is substance. Spirit is the substance of all the ideas, the substance of true creation. Therefore you can see very easily now that Mrs. Eddy goes to a second step and takes the subject of creation, the creation of idea, and presents it from the point of view of spirit and says, this creation of idea is really spiritual, and this spiritual creation is the only substance, and therefore the ideas constitute the substance of creation. Is that clear? And is it clear that this second subject says something different than the first one? If we go to the third one, to soul, the infinite cannot be expressed in the limited, which then is shown that the infinite cannot be expressed in a limited creation, because we know the nature of soul tells us that soul is never in anything. And we know the synonymous term soul, we know that soul would express that it is never finite, never bounded by anything, never compressed into anything, therefore is never in anything. So Mrs. Eddy apparently takes in a third view and presents creation from the point of view of soul and says, look here, that creation which mind creates, the creation of ideas, and which in spirit is the only substantial creation, the only substance of creation, that creation, that substance of creation is always unbounded, never limited, never in anything. It's never in a body, never in a man, never in matter, never in nature. It's always outside of the finite. Can you hear that up to this point? Already Mrs. Eddy shows, so to say, three very different aspects of creation, of the realm of ideas. And therefore we get already a very ordered sense which would show us, in order first to establish in consciousness the answer to the question, what constitutes creation? What is the substance, the nature of that creation? Where is that creation? That these big questions would already be answered here and say, look here, when we talk about creation, we only mean the creations of mind that is constituted of ideas, and this creation of ideas from the point of view of spirit is the only substantial creation and is substance, and that substance of the creation of idea is never limited in any way. It's never in anything. And you have established already the nature of that creation. If we go further to principle, we come to the next epitome. Man, as the true idea of creation, is as perfect as its perfect divine principle. Can you see in here principle? You could be sidetracked, I must say, by the term perfect and say, well, love is perfection, so why isn't it love here? And the text actually in the textbook is speaking a lot about that perfect man and perfect idea and perfect principle. But the tone of principle in here is not that it is perfect. The tone in here, as you see, is the relationship of creation to its principle. That the creation is the same as its principle, the same perfect, is harmonious the same way as its principle, is unlimited the same way as its principle. You can see that it shows now that creation of ideas is of the same measure and same nature as its principle. Therefore, we feel that here another aspect of our creation is under consideration. Up to soul, we have seen, she only defined the nature of creation. The nature. And now, as a fourth point, she says, but you know that creation is not isolated somewhere, but it's always in relation to its principle. And principle is always that which governs the relationship between principle and idea. So at this point one begins to see that creation must always be brought back to its principle and see not as something self-existent, something that is self-operative, but it has the same nature as the divine principle. And so we have the sense of the unity of principle and idea being one, creator and creation being one. If we go further to life, the text seems to bring out what I try to epitomize here, which says, man reflects the idea of fatherhood by raising thought to the contemplation of creation as idea. We suddenly find here a completely different aspect of creation, you see. Namely, suddenly, the standpoint of man. What are we doing with that creation? How is our approach to that creation? And life says, you should be the idea of fatherhood, you should entertain the idea of fatherhood, which means what? You should always contemplate creation as idea and never as anything else. And you feel that here suddenly comes in a great break, namely, she's no more now defining the nature of creation. She's now defining how we can accept that creation as our creation. So it gives a terrific sense here that she gives the method of how to entertain in our consciousness now that creation which she has depicted in mind and spirit and soul, how that creation which she has depicted as the real creation, how we can now entertain that creation in consciousness, and therefore give to everything, to all our experience, really the nature of true creation. That we consider now everything as idea. This she hasn't said before. See? What is fatherhood? What is man that reflects fatherhood? You see, we have to be careful with our terminology. When we are thinking along the Word, God as the Word, then we always see life to be the Father, life the source of all supply, life the source of all provision, life that supplies everything. And therefore we consider God as the Father. When we consider life in the Christ, which is Christ is the message from God to man, the relationship how God translates itself to man, therefore shows the Word of God in its activity as translating itself to its creation. Then we speak about the fatherhood of God. No more about God the Father. No more about life the Father. But then it is the fatherhood, namely the expression of the Father. The hood of Father is indicating that the Father is actually expressing his Father sense, which is the Christ. He expresses it. But when we come to Christianity, which has the focal point of idea, then we must see at the point of life that the idea expresses fatherhood sense. It's no more God that fathers. but that now, by reflection, man expresses fatherhood, which is a completely different concept again, which says, but how can I express fatherhood? Well, I can express it by giving to the creation only that which I have borrowed from life, God. Therefore, I project with my consciousness into the universe, into the creation, only ideas. I begin to contemplate the universe only as ideas. And therefore, I have always to give to the universe ideas and nothing less than ideas. No depressive thoughts, no destructive thoughts, no destructive contemplation, no criticism. So that at this point I begin to see that this creation, which exists through mind, spirit, soul, as a creation of unlimited ideas, that this in life must be expressed as my fatherhood sense, so that I create the universe for me. I call worlds into being at that point. I begin to see, instead of a rotten universe, a universe of ideas. I do that now. It's no more God. Can you see that? Then we come to truth, and the text shows there that man reflects the idea of sonship, the idea of sonship. How? By claiming the true creation as idea for himself and for others. So again you have that man reflects sonship. In the world, truth is the Son of God. In the Christ, truth is sonship. It's the sonship of God. But when we come to Christianity, to man, then man reflects that sonship. He is then expressing the sonship, how? By accepting himself as the Son. See, in the world you wouldn't have to do that. In the world you just state that God is truth and is represented by the Son. In the Christ, you just have that the Christ is the Son of God, and therefore is sonshipping the universe. But in Christianity, where we are at the point of man, we jolly well have to see that we too express that sonship. But how are we going to do that? Now comes in the sense of truth, by claiming, affirming for ourselves the whole creation. By claiming for ourselves only that which constitutes the true creation. What constitutes the true creation? That has been shown in the passage on mind and spirit and soul. So at the point of truth we are going to claim those three. And if we come to love, Mrs. Eddy shows there in that part, man reflects the idea of motherhood. How? By loving the creation of ideas. That's motherhood. Now, in the world, love is mother. In the Christ, love is the motherhood of God, the hooding of love, of mother. And in Christianity, at the point of man, we express or reflect motherhood. But how? By loving, by the whole creation, by taking in the whole creation in its perfection instead of its imperfection, by accepting that perfection as our true selfhood. Now, let's see the relationship of these seven again. See, we really come now to interpretation where we see, we must see the interrelationship of these parts. And we can now easily see, just going over those seven again, that in the first three, Mrs. Eddy would just state the nature of creation in the first three by saying, from the point of view of mind, creation consists of ideas. From the point of view of spirit, these ideas are the only substance there is, and they are spiritual substance. And from the point of view of soul, these ideas are never limited, never in anything. Therefore, the creation of ideas is never in matter, in body, in any form. So can you see, if we would just stop there and say, well, this is creation, we would state a wonderful sense of what constitutes creation. But what are we going to do with it? You see? Now comes the point of intersection of the words I said, but you should accept that. You should accept that statement for yourself. How are you going to accept that statement for yourself? And principle comes and says, you know, all that the principle has created through mind, spirit, soul, is the same what you can accept. Because man is just as perfect as its principle. If the principle has created through mind, spirit, soul a perfect creation, and man is one with that principle, then man can, at the place of principle, also accept that creation as his creation. How is he going to do that? Through life, truth, and love. Through fatherhood, sonship, and motherhood of the idea. What does it mean, through fatherhood? By constantly having that principle of creation, which is mind, spirit, soul, in view, and contemplating constantly only that creation. In truth, by claiming that creation to be his own creation, and in love, by seeing the fulfillment and the bigness and the all-inclusiveness of that creation at the point of perfection. That's motherhood. And that would be the chapter.